United States government.
This is VOA News. I'm Tommy McNeil. Israeli War Cabinet centrist member Benny Gantz has resigned. AP correspondent Karen Shamas tells us more.
The move does not immediately pose a threat to Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu, who still controls a majority coalition in parliament. But the Israeli leader will now become more heavily reliant on his far-right allies to stay in power. Gantz had previously said he would leave the government by June the 8th if Netanyahu did not formulate a new plan for post-war Gaza. The popular former military chief joined Netanyahu's government shortly after October the 7th in a show of unity. His presence also boosted Israel's credibility with its international partners. Gantz has good working relations with U.S. officials. I'm Karen Chavez.
Israel freed four hostages over the weekend in a raid on a refugee camp in Gaza. Details from VOA's Arash Arabasadi.
It was the largest hostage recovery operation since the beginning of the war late last year. As a freed hostage arrived at a medical facility in Tel Aviv, people sang in Hebrew, "The people of Israel are alive." It's a stark contrast to the Nusairat refugee camp in Gaza, where the Israeli operation left more than 270 Palestinians dead, according to the Hamas-run Gaza Health Ministry. Arash Arabasadi, VOA News.
The director of the UN World Food Program said Sunday the program has paused its distribution of humanitarian aid from an American-built pier off Gaza, saying that she was concerned about the safety of the people after what had been one of the deadliest days of the war there. Saturday saw both an Israeli military assault that freed four hostages but left 274 Palestinians and one Israeli commando dead. And Cindy McCain said two of WFP's warehouses in Gaza had been rocketed and a staffer injured. Sunday's UN announcement of the pause appears a latest setback for the U.S. sea route set up to try to bring more food and aid into Gaza-starving people. This is VOA News. Ukraine on Sunday said its forces hit an ultra-modern Russian warplane stationed on an airbase nearly 600 kilometers from the front lines. Kyiv's main military intelligence service shared satellite photos that showed the aftermath of the attack. If confirmed, it would mark Ukraine's first known successful strike on a twin-engine Su-57 stealth jet, lauded as Moscow's most advanced fighter plane. In one photo, black soot marks in small craters can be seen dotting a concrete strip around the parked aircraft. According to the main intelligence directorate of Ukraine's Ministry of Defense, the strike took place on Saturday at a base in southern Russia, some 589 kilometers from the front line. In a shocking move, French President Emmanuel Macron on Sunday said he would dissolve Parliament and call new legislative elections later in the month after he was trounced in the European elections by Marine Le Pen's far-right party.
Après avoir procédé aux consultations prévues à l'article 12 de notre Constitution.
Macron said the results were a disaster for his government and one he could not pretend to ignore. In a high-risk political gamble less than 2 months before Paris hosts the Olympics, he said lower house elections would be called for June 30th with a second round vote on July 7th. Macron's widely unexpected decision could leave him in nearly powerless position if Le Pen's National Rally Party wins a parliamentary majority. U.S. President Joe Biden's son Hunter and the Biden family are weathering the public airing of Hunter's drug addiction as the federal court trial resumes Monday. AP correspondent Julie Walker with more.
Hunter Biden's family, including his mother, the First Lady, has gone to great lengths to support him as he stands trial for lying on a federal gun purchase from when he said he did not have a drug problem. Jill Biden has been a regular presence in the federal courtroom in Delaware, and other family members have attended. Every family wrestles with personal challenges, whether they're famous or not. But the airing in open court of tawdry details surrounding Hunter Biden's addiction is an order of greater magnitude, and it's happening in the glare of an election year. I'm Julie Walker.
New Zealand Prime Minister Christopher Luxon said on Monday that China's premier, Liu Xiang, would visit the country later in the week in the first trip to the nation in 7 years by a Chinese premier. Luxon said in a statement he looked forward to the warm welcoming in New Zealand and that the visit would be a valuable opportunity for exchanges on areas of cooperation between the two countries. I'm Tommy McNeil, VOA News.
Africa. Welcome to Daybreak Africa from the Voice of America. I'm James Botti, Washington. Today is Monday, June 10th, and here are some of the stories we are covering. The East African community swears he is first female secretary general amid political and financial crisis.
My priorities will be strengthen economic integration that encourages innovation, entrepreneurship, and job creation. In promoting peace and security, a secure East Africa is the foundation upon which we can build lasting prosperity.
Negotiations between labor unions and the Nigerian government have stalled, raising the prospects of another countrywide strike. Another group of Liberian refugees were repatriated Sunday from Ghana. Malawi's High Court nullifies the appointment of the Director of Immigration and Citizenship Services.
People are diverting from the main issue. They have to read the judgment. The issues that the court was dealing with were not issues of corruption. The court was dealing with the issues of eligibility of someone on a certain position.
And supporters of the U.S. presidential candidates contrast sharply on LGBTQ rights. Those stories plus Samson O'Malley Sports are coming up on Daybreak Africa. East African community heads of state appointed and sworn in the organization's first female secretary general during a virtual summit held last Friday. The appointment of Veronica Mweni Ndova from Kenya comes as the East African region is experiencing a financial crisis and insecurity in eastern DRC. Moses Javier Rimana reports.
For the first time since the East African community was founded in 1967, the East African community will now have a female secretary general, Veronica Mweni Ndova from Kenya. She will serve a period of less than 2 years, succeeding Dr. Peter Mathuki, who was recalled in March by Kenyan President William Ruto amid financial mismanagement allegations. Ndova said that her tenure will focus on promoting deeper integration of the community.
In this regard, my priorities will be strengthen economic integration that encourages innovation, entrepreneurship, and job creation. In promoting peace and security, a secure East Africa is the foundation upon which we can build lasting prosperity.
Peace and security is still one of the major challenges the East African community is facing. During the summit, Uganda's President Yoweri Museveni hailed President Salva Kiir of South Sudan, who is the current chair of the Heads of State Summit.
I want to thank His Excellency President Salva Kiir Mayardi for the trips he made to Rwanda, to Burundi, to Congo, DRC, to Angola on the issue of the peace in Eastern Congo. We need peace in Congo.
DRC joined the East African community in 2022, but saw its relations with neighboring Rwanda deteriorate as the latter is accused of supporting the M23 rebels that have caused insecurity in the eastern DRC. Despite joining the community 2 years ago, DRC is yet to remit its annual contributions, making it the biggest defaulter, owing the community $14.7 million of the $39.8 million the member states owe the community. Currently, activities of the East African Court of Justice and the Legislative Assembly have been suspended due to lack of funds. Fred Mukasambide is an East African Community Integration expert and vice president of the Democratic Party of Uganda.
Finances of the East African community are completely muddled. That definitely owes to the higgledy-piggledy nature within which, of course, partner states find themselves sending subventions to the East African community coffers. The goodwill is what is lacking, and what is more material right now is an establishment of a process and a policy that requires GDP contributions per annum from all partner states.
An alternative financing mechanism was drafted by the East African community more than a decade ago, which requires member states to contribute a percentage based on their GDP. The new Secretary General is taking the helm of the community that is under a financial and a political crisis. Moses Aviarimana for Voice of America.
A Malawi lawyer and immigration officer says he feels vindicated after a Malawi High Court nullified the appointment of the new director of the Department of Immigration and Citizenship Services. The court says Charles Kalumo's appointment violated the law. Lawyer Chiku Lupiliro Zidana tells me the court judgment proves his case that President Lazarus Chakwera contravened the Public Service Act when he appointed Kalumo. The law says that anyone over 60 years of age should retire from public service, and Kalimo was 70 years old when he was appointed.
I filed the petition to the High Court of Malawi. It was a judicial review because I had noted that when Brigadier Charles Kalimo was appointed, there were some procedures that were flouted. For example, when he was being appointed, the appointing authority did not use Section 3 of Immigration Act, which is a guidance as to who should be appointed as Director General of Immigration and Citizenship Services. So instead of using Section 3 of the Immigration Act, they used Public Service Act. Indeed, you know, the Public Service Act gives the president the power to make appointments. But in this instance, it was supposed to be the minister who was supposed to make that appointment. In addition to that, the other thing that we noted is that the appointment was in contravention of Section 29 of the Public Service Act, which says that any person who reaches the age of 60 years should retire from the public service. At the time of appointment, the appointee was 70 years of age, which was 10 years older than the recommended age of retirement. So this is someone who stopped working in 1994. Then you're bringing him back in 2024, if you calculate properly, that is 30 years after retirement. So, you know, issues of effectiveness and efficiencies are in question because a lot has changed, you know, technologically. Things have changed, the way we operate. Maybe that time we were doing manual things, but now we are operating digitally.
I read an opinion article in the Malawi papers where some Malawians feel that removing Kalimo would give in to corruption because they feel he's fighting corruption at the immigration service. What do you think?
My opinion is that is not true for me. One, okay, if someone wants to fight corruption, that is recommended. Actually, it has to be everyone's responsibility to fight corruption. But then when you are coming to fight corruption, you have to find yourself at that place legally. If Mr. Kalimo was not sure of the things that I've mentioned before, I don't think I would have been the one going to court to challenge his appointment because the issues of appointments wouldn't have arisen. But if Mr. Kalimo was below the mandatory retirement age, if he was in the public service, if it was the minister who made the appointment, why would I have challenged him? So people are diverting from the main issue. They have to read the judgment. The issues that the court was dealing with were not issues of corruption. The court was dealing with the issues of eligibility of someone on a certain position. So I feel like it's very improper for people to divert from the main issue. We are talking at the rule of law here.
Chikulu Piliro Zidana is a Malawi lawyer and immigration officer. He was speaking with us from Lilongwe, Malawi. The Malawi government has asked the court to stay a ruling nullifying the appointment of Charles Kalimo as director of the Department of Immigration and Citizens Services. A judge last week agreed with petitioners that President Lazaro Chakwera contravened the Public Service Act when he appointed Kalimo, and the court agreed. Information Minister Moses Konkuyu tells me the Attorney General has filed a motion to stay the ruling.
The Attorney General has moved to make an application for a stay of the ruling. So we will be waiting to see more of court action on the same because the Attorney General's office has made an application for a stay of that ruling.
Of course, the lawyer, Mr. Sidana, who petitioned the court, is saying that the appointment violates the Constitution and the president used the Public Service Act to appoint Mr. Kalimo, and that's what the court agreed with.
Yeah, but now this has gone through a process of litigation. And having gone through the judicial processes, we also use the remedies that are provided for under the law, and one of which is to seek a stay of the ruling, because obviously there were arguments from the government side as well. So where the law provides for this remedy, we'll wait for the court to again weigh the remedy that we have sought through this application.
Moses Konkuyu is Malawi's information minister. He was speaking with us from the capital, Lilongwe. You are listening to Daybreak Africa on the Voice of America. I'm James Botti in Washington. Today is Monday, June 10th. For more Africa news and features, visit our website at voaafrica.com. Connect with us on all social media platforms. We are on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. Negotiations between labor and the Nigerian government have stalled, raising the prospects of another countrywide strike. The last strike crippled critical sectors of the economy. A government committee offered a monthly wage of 60,000 naira, about $41.38 U.S., which unions rejected. Frank Tete is executive director of Citizens Advocacy for Social and Economic Rights. He tells VOA's Chinedu Ofor that the country's economy could collapse if both sides are unable to reach a compromise.
The government lost it when it allowed the situation to get to a point of agitation on the part of labor for increase in the minimum wage. A government that is proactive, that knows what it ought to do, ought to have initiated the process of reviewing the minimum wage to reflect the modern and current realities. So we have a country that is so badly governed that our problem is way beyond minimum wage, but we're simply witnessing a class struggle between those who have ability to work and ability to threaten the government in order to get whatever they want, and a government that is operated by people who just want to ensconce themselves, get the benefit of government for themselves. I don't think that the application of strike as a means of negotiation is good for the Nigerian economy.
Is strike the way to get the government to, in the words of labor, give them a living wage instead of a minimum wage?
Unfortunately, it appears so. But we've seen an era of defiance and disregard for the provisions of the Trade Union Act of 2005 as amended. The labor has reached a point where it disregards the provision of the law, but forgetting that a very fragile economy like Nigeria, with institutions and the social structures that are very weak, that cannot actually support the stability of a country, where strikes are often employed, it causes a lot of disruption and sadly loss of lives, as we have witnessed it many times in the public hospitals. As bad as they are, as decrepit as they are, when labor unions, especially in the health sector, whether it's the medical and health workers union or the National Association of Resident Doctors, all go on strike in the name of pushing for better pay or the one sort of industrial crisis or the other, the people suffer in such excruciating manner. And so one would have thought that labor would leave out a strike in the pursuit of its goals. It should subject itself to the provisions of the Trade Union Act, the provisions of the Trade Disputes Act, and also respect the provisions of the Trade Disputes Essential Services Act, which outlaw strikes in areas of labor that provide essential services. If the labor attempts to go on another strike, there are going to be dangerous times ahead for this government and Nigerians.
Labor leaders are pushing back, saying if the government provides the enabling environment, improves lives, improves security, pays workers what they are worth, and makes the economy work for everybody, there will be no need for a strike.
I think that labor is complicit in the bad situation in Nigeria at the moment. We have had successive governments that have run Nigeria aground. Nigeria is on the precipice of being regarded as a failed state, that it has been unable to defeat terrorists, the insurgents in the northeast. There is a widespread kidnapping and banditry across the entire country. Nigeria's security situation is very bad, to the extent that it's not something that can be easily resolved.
Frank Tete is the executive director of Citizens Advocacy for Social and Economic Rights. He was speaking with viewers Chinedu Ofor from Nigeria's capital, Abuja. More Liberians were repatriated Sunday from Ghana on buses arranged by the Liberian government The first group of 700 arrived in Liberia last month. Thousands who fled their country's civil war in the early 1990s have been living at the Bujumbura refugee camp in Ghana. In 2010, the Ghanaian Refugee Board reached an agreement with the UNHCR to close the camp. In March 2024, authorities began demolishing its structures. Dennis Guyon is president of the Bujumbura camp. He tells me that the latest returning refugees are happy to be going back home, where they don't have to sleep in churches or school buildings.
772 persons left today on the 16 buses, 3 trucks with their luggages. We just posted them and they are now on the Côte d'Ivoire side going to the Labyrinth border.
How do they feel going home?
The body is like they are happy to go home because there is nowhere left home. First, people were putting resistance that we want to go, but now where they found themselves is for them to go back home. Because you don't continue sleeping outside, you don't continue sleeping in church building, you don't continue sleeping in schools. So they're happy going home, thinking going home, they're nowhere left home.
Now, you say you were processing the people at the border. What do you do in order for them to leave?
The enterprise says a traveling certificate for them. And since we have a police escort from the camp to the border, when we get to the border, we allow them to stay on the bus and take all the traveling certificates and go to immigration for the stamping, go to customs, the process for them to pass through, you know, free.
Have you gotten any feedback from Liberia from the first group that arrived there a week or two ago?
Yeah, we heard from Liberia that they begin the dispatch today. Some were going to Monrovia, and those who don't have any family, the government is going to take care of them per what they told me.
Do you have any more Liberians still at the camp in Bujumbura?
We have people still plenty, and during this gone trip, the medical doctors that came with the team said the sick people and those that are not normal, they're supposed to go by flight, so they couldn't take down the buses. So we still got people here, and there are other people. You know the number they are taking, 770, 772, and you got over 3,000 to 4,000 people still here. So there are a lot of people that are still here and willing to go back home.
Dennis Guyon is the president of the Bujumbura refugee camp, housing thousands of Liberians in Ghana. He was speaking with us from the Ghana-Ivory Coast border. The number of adults in the United States identifying as something other than heterosexual is holding steady at about 7.2%, and the two presidential candidates are taking note. VOA senior Washington correspondent Carolyn Priscitti tells us how they are trying to attract that population.
Gallup estimates that a little more than 7% of American adults are lesbian, gay, bisexual, transgender, or questioning their sexuality, known as LGBTQ. That group protested a 2017 Twitter announcement by then-President Donald Trump that barred transgender people from serving in the military. Less than a week into his presidency, Joe Biden overturned the ban.
Transgender personnel, if qualified in every other way, can serve their government in the United States military.
Sarah Kate Ellis is president and CEO of GLAAD, an LGBTQ organization.
It is quite a relief to have an administration that understands who we are and values us as American citizens.
Also during his term, President Joe Biden signed the Respect for Marriage Act, which gave federal rights and benefits to same-sex couples. Here's what he said to the LGBTQ community during a White House event.
You are loved. You are heard. You are understood. And you belong.
Randy Bravo says he will vote for Biden.
As a gay man, you know, a lot of my rights with the other parties can be in jeopardy. So part of the reason why I do support Biden, not this term, and I did support him last term as well, was because of what he stands for.
Former President Donald Trump was the first president to appoint an openly gay cabinet official, but he has taken an overall more conservative stance. He has said God created two genders, male and female.
What is with pronouns? If you really study it and look at it, it's sick. It's sick. I will protect the content that is pro-God. We're going to protect pro-God context and content.
It's a narrative that his voters stand behind. Like Thomas Isbell, who attended a Trump rally in Ohio.
The Republican sidelines more so with what the Bible says. in terms of eliminating abortion, in terms of getting rid of the LGBTQ.
President Biden has condemned conservative state laws restricting gender-affirming surgery and classes on sexual orientation. Former President Trump promised this on his campaign website.
On day one, I will revoke Joe Biden's cruel policies on so-called gender-affirming care. Ridiculous. A process that includes giving kids puberty blockers, mutating their physical appearance, and ultimately performing surgery on minor children.
Democratic advisor Brad Woodhouse says this is the traditional Republican Party that Republican voters want.
They're anti-immigrant, they're anti-transgender, they're anti-gay, and Trump knew that. He took that, he held on to it.
These voters helped Biden win swing states in 2020. A poll by the advocacy group GLAAD shows the same strong support for Biden, but they overwhelmingly urge the Republican Party to focus on the economy rather than restricting their rights. Carolyn Pursuti, VOA News.
It is time now for Daybreak Africa Sports, and here is Samson Omale in Abuja, Nigeria. A very good Monday morning to you, Samson.
Good Monday morning to you too, James. We begin the sport in South Africa, where the Netherlands paired Wesema on Sunday won the 97th edition of South Africa's Comrades Marathon, which took her from Durban to Pietermaritzburg. The race was the 49th up-run of all time. The 26-year-old Wesema crossed the finish line in an unofficial time of 5 hours, 25 minutes, 01 seconds. South Africa's Dan Mosalakwe finished second in 5 hours, 25 minutes, 45 seconds, with Ethiopia's Digefa Lafebo rounding out the podium in 5 hours, 27 minutes, 49 seconds. Wesema was the first non-South African winner of the race since Zimbabwe's Stephen Mujingi triumphed in 2011.
Yeah, it was very special. Like I said, last year, I was already blown away by how big this race is here in South Africa, how much support that I got. But this year was even bigger because people knew my face. People just shouted my name all along the course.
In the female category, South Africa's ultra marathon queen, Gerda Steen, smashed the Comrades Marathon record, winning her third Comrades Marathon title and second up-run in the new record time of 5 hours, 49 minutes, 46 seconds. Steen has had a watershed year and is the current record holder of the Comrades up-run and down-run distance. Steen with athletics. Ghanaian athletics witnessed a historic moment this weekend as sprinter Abdul Rashid Saminu and high jumper Rose Yabua became the nation's first athletes to qualify for the Paris 2024 Olympics as individuals. Previously, only Ghana's 4x100 meters men's relay team had secured their Olympic spot. In tennis news, Tunisia's Hans Jobeur will be up against Colombia's Osorio Serrano on June the 10th in the round of 16 of the Rotse Open Nottingham in England. Two-time Wimbledon finalist Hans Jobeur headlines the entry list in Nottingham. She's joined by Grand Slam champions Emma Navarro, Barbora Krejcikova, and Sofia Kenin. In Kenya, the Billie Jean King Cup Group 3 Africa campaign gets underway on Monday, with host Kenya taking on Mauritius at the Nairobi Club. The Kenyan team, inspired by junior Wimbledon champion Angela Okutoyi, will be looking to improve on their bronze medal finish at the same tournament in June last year. The winner of the tournament will earn promotion to Billie Jean King Cup Europe Africa Group 2 in 2025. And finally, in basketball news, Kampala will play host to FIBA Africa Zone 5 Under-18 Championship. The four-team, six-day event began on Sunday, June 9th at the Lugogo Indoor Arena in Kampala. The winner from this tournament will proceed to the 2025 FIBA Under-19 Basketball World Cup. And that's it for this Monday's edition of Daybreak Africa Sports. I am Samson Omale in Abuja, Nigeria. It's back to you, James, in Washington.
Thank you, Samson. Have a good Monday. And that's it for this Monday, June 10th edition of Daybreak Africa. We thank you for beginning your week with us. For more African news and features, visit our website at voaafrica.com. Connect with us on all social media platforms, including Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. We are also on YouTube, where you can watch our TV shows, Africa 54, Straight Talk Africa, and Red Carpet. On behalf of the Daybreak Africa team, I'm James Barty in Washington, wishing that you will have a great week.